Welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show, bringing the tales and stories of the ancient Celts to your fireside.
Episode 48, The Cauldron of Rebirth.
Hello, I'm Gary.
And I'm Ruth. Welcome to the sixth episode in the Saga of Branwen.
We hope you're all safe and well and you're keeping comfortably going in lockdown. And if you'd like to contact us about it or about anything else, just leave us any feedback. We'd love to hear from you. You can email us at CelticMythShow@gmail.com.
You can also leave us some voice feedback using the widget SpeakPipe thingy on our website at CelticMythPodShow.com. We always enjoy hearing from you.
We do. And for this episode, you can find the show notes at CelticMythPodShow.com/cauldron. There you go. Have we got any news and views?
Well, funny you should say that.
Yes.
There's an event happening that's quite unusual, so I thought we'd talk about it.
Ah.
There are thousands of people, including the Druid and Pagan community, on the longest day of the year who normally gather to watch the sunrise behind the Heel Stone at Stonehenge. But this year, Stonehenge will be closed for the summer solstice. So in a historic event, English Heritage will live stream the sunrise on June the 21st, Midsummer's Day, for the first time ever. So everyone can join in and with thousands of people and watch across the world.
That'll be interesting.
The sunrise at Stonehenge will be live streamed bright and early at 4:54 UK time on Sunday morning on June 21st on English Heritage's social media sites. However, I think the live stream is likely to start earlier, so keep an eye on those social media pages.
Yeah, they'll probably want to talk about it or something first, won't they?
I would have thought so, and, you know, give people chance to get up and set up and whatever they're going to watch.
4:54 a.m. is very early in the morning.
It's so early I can't even say it. But yes, it is. So I imagine the live stream will start a bit earlier, so it's worth keeping an eye on their social media pages to find out.
If you're not familiar with Stonehenge or you've never been there, then have a look at a virtual tour of all the stones that the English Heritage Stonehenge website are offering. It's really fascinating. Not only that, but you can also see a virtual skyscape which shows you how the night sky aligns with the stones. You'll find all the links to these things in the show notes at CelticMythPodShow.com/cauldron.
Sounds brilliant, doesn't it?
Does.
Right, now let's make a start on our story by reminding ourselves of the last episode.
Okay, sounds good.
You there?
Yes, my lord, Ethnician.
Tell me, who owns these fine steeds?
They belong to Matholoc, High King of Fair Erin.
Land of Erin herself has been mutilated and humiliated by this cowardly act.
I am sure the insult was deliberate. Such an act of extreme violence.
But I don't understand. If it's war they crave, why would they give me the hand of their fairest maiden?
Branwen knew that if she could not calm her husband down, bring his sense of outrage and righteous indignation back down to a level, then there would be war between the two islands, and that she could not bear.
We have come from the High King, Bran, my lord. He wishes to know why you have left his court, and what you are planning to do now.
By the gods, I will tell you true. Sirs, if I had known that would happen when we stepped onto these shores, I would never have come. I have been thoroughly insulted. In all of our histories, and all of our tales, no king and no land has ever been more insulted than I have.
Lord?
My fine horses have all been mutilated and a great insult has been done to me. And the island of Erin.
Thank you.
The sea was rough, with white horses breaking 100 paces out and galloping tall and proud up to the beach. They lifted each Irish ship anchored in the bay, rolled it high, and dropped it back down into the hollow between the waves before making landfall. Thick, heavy grey-coloured clouds scudded by and were slowly turning the colour of thunder. The light rain had just begun to fall, and Manawydan and his party rode up to the Irish fleet and asked to parley with the Irish King Matholwch. The Irish set chairs up on the strand in a wide circle, and when once all were seated, the Irish king made his entrance and sat on his finely carved chair in front of the assembly with his arms folded across his chest, clutching his cloak around him. Manawydan brought the offer of the Welsh king, Bran, to Matholwch. He spoke to the king gently and in a kindly manner, holding out the hand of friendship to him.
Lord, our king, Bran the Blessed, recognises the great wrong done to you. He offers a silver rod as thick as your little finger and as tall as yourself, as well as a gold plate as broad as your face.
Yes.
He invites you to visit him at his court, and he will make peace with you on any terms you might require.
We thank him, Bran, for his offer, but we must retire and take counsel on this.
All the nobles stood, and the Irish retired to Matholwch's flagship, leaving Manawydan and his small group of warriors and nobles to pack up their gear and return to the court of Bran. The High King would not be pleased there had not been an immediate answer, but Honor demanded that they let the Irish take their time and hold their counsel.
It is a good offer for an honour price, but I think it is not grand enough for the honour of all Erin. What say you nobles all?
The humiliation is great, my lord. I say that blood calls for blood. We should go to war.
On the other hand, being tied in peace to the Island of the Mighty, as we already are after your marriage to the Lady Branwen, will bring much profit and excellent trading.
Yes, the trade would be good, but we have suffered a terrible shaming from the act of this black-hearted brother of Bran's. The honour price the High King is offering us is in truth high. But is it enough?
It is high enough for your shame only, my lord. But what of the shame of the whole of Erin?
But if we refuse the offer, the bards will sing songs of the shame forever because we will not have accepted the offered atonement.
That is true. That is true. Let us not forget that Bran has offered to replace all our fine horses. So he is recognising the insult done to the breast of our fair land.
He is acknowledging the slight to the sovereignty of Erin, my lord. There is no way in the sight of all the gods that the insult was intentional. The court of Bran would not allow such a heinous deed.
I suppose that is true.
Then let us return to the court of Bran in peace, my lords.
Agreed. Let us depart for the court at once.
The vermilion afternoon sun dominated the sky as it sank towards the western horizon. Tent flaps and cloaks billowed with a sudden swift breeze, and the air was filled with the scent of the evening feast as it was brought up to the long tables. The tents and pavilions had been set up to reflect the status of the children of Hlir and the Irish guests, just as they had been on that fateful day when Branwen had become betrothed to the King of the Emerald Isle. They all sat around a fine linen cloth that had been laid over the long table. Goblets and plates of gold and silver held the most exquisite wines and the finest of meats. They were served by the most beautiful servants that Matholwch had ever seen. It was obvious to all that Bran was welcoming his honoured guest with the most generous and lavish feast that he could manage. Bran was sitting on his chair with his long legs tucked under him, and Matholwch sat opposite him. The Irish High King's flaming red hair caught the light of the torches as they were lit, and seemed to ignite with a fire of its own. Succulent meats and freshly baked trenchers were placed in front of those nobles feasting, and soon the conversation rose like a slow but all-encompassing wave of sound.
How fare the preparations for harvest back home, King Matholwch?
There is yet another cycle of the moon to go before first harvest, my lord.
Are your fields as rich and fertile, though?
Fertile enough, my lord.
That's good, that's good. And are your people, those that work the fields, are they happy?
Yes.
Bran felt as though he were struggling to find his way through fog in his conversation with Matholwch. He was doing the best that he could to treat this Irish king with the highest of honours, and the man looked as though there were a bitter taste in his mouth. but I noticed that he was not as cheerful as he was at their feastings before the attack on the horses, and the only reason he could find for Matholwch's appearance and manner was that the Irishman did not feel that the atonement for the insult given to him was great enough. This was no way for Branwen's husband to feel.
It seems to me that you are not as happy at this feast as you were before, my lord. Is it because you feel that our honour price was too small? Then I shall add to it anything you might desire, and tomorrow I shall pay the horses as I promised.
Lord, may the gods reward you for your generosity.
And I shall make the honour price greater than any given before. I will give you a large and wondrous cauldron. If any of your men are slain today, then place the body within the cauldron, and tomorrow he will be as fit and as healthy again as he ever was in life. Those that emerge from the cauldron of rebirth cannot speak, though. We believe that those that are born again are struck dumb so that they cannot tell us the wonders that they have seen in the other world.
You would give this wondrous item to me, my lord? It seems to me that in a battle, the size of my army would not be diminished by its losses, and we would surely overcome any foe.
That is true, lord.
It also seems to me that in giving this wondrous thing, you are trusting that the men of Erin will not make war on the Island of the Mighty.
That is also true, my lord.
Then I am truly satisfied, my lord Bran. You have repaid the price of our sovereignty fully with this magical gift. I offer you my greatest thanks, most noble king.
That is most excellent, my lord and brother. Now, let us feast and make merry.
All through the night they did just that until the long shadows of the dawn sun stretched across the tents like grasping fingers. Matholwch and Bran slept for an hour, and then Manawydan and Nisien oversaw the gathering of Bran's best horses, trained for his knights and trained for battle. Every single war steed and tamed horse was paid to Matholwch, and still the honour price had not been paid. So they brought colts and untrained horses to Matholwch until he was satisfied that the honour price had been fully paid. They travelled then to another district known as Talabolin, where the high cliff-edge pastures made for good grazing land, and left the Irish king's horses there to graze. Evnisian was a dark, glowering presence among them, but the happiness of Branwen and her man outshone his shadow. On the next night, they sat down to meat again, and Matholwch was still glowing with the riches he had received, the Cauldron of Rebirth giving him an inexhaustible army, the finest flowering of Welsh horses that he could take back to Erin, gold, silver, and best of all, the lovely and fair Branwen as his bride. A smile spread from one ear to the other under his beard as he leant forward to speak to his brother king.
Lord, tell me, where did this cauldron you gave me originally come from?
It came to me from a man who was from your land, and for all I know, he may have acquired it there.
Who was that?
His name was Hrasalai Skovewil. He came here from Ireland with his wife, Chomaidai Comainfall. He told me that they had escaped from an iron house in Ireland. It had been made white hot around them, but they had managed to escape from it. I find it strange that you know nothing about this.
I do know something about this, my brother. There is a strange tale here, and if you like, I shall tell it to you.
I would love to hear it. Pray, continue, my lord.
One fine lunar day, many moons earlier, the young Irish High King Matholwch had been hunting in the realm of one of the kings who paid him homage. As he rode, he decided to climb a mound near the Lake of the Abyss to take his ease before returning to the celebrations. The same lake was said to be bottomless. It was later known as the Lake of the Cauldron, and the reason for that name will become clear. As he rested and drank of the finest mead, the waters of the lake began to churn, and the wash upon the shoreline became foamy. Matholwch watched the ripples spread out from a point on the lake's surface. The head of a large man broke the surface and started to move towards the shore. He was tall, fair to look upon, with strawberry blonde hair, and most noticeably, a huge cauldron slung across his back. Although he was a large, muscular man, his body was scarred with the legends of a thousand battles, and the gleam in his eye spoke of the evils he had committed. Matholwch was as brave as any warrior born should be, but he felt watchful as the giant of a man approached him, watchful and ready for battle.
Another head broke the surface of the water behind him, and the king saw that a woman, even taller and twice as big as the waterborne warrior, started to splash out of the water towards him. They strode purposefully through the water and approached the Irish king, giving him fair greeting. Matholwch responded in kind.
How goes it with you, Thlasar of the Lake?
I will tell you how it goes with us, Lord. Do you see she who accompanies me? After a month and a fortnight, my wife will become pregnant again, and after another month and a fortnight, she'll give birth to a fully armoured fighting man. And so it goes on every month and a fortnight.
So why have you sought me out, sir?
For our part, my Lord King, we seek a place to dwell, and in return the warriors born of Cymydai Cymainfoch will enter your service and fight for you.
Matholwch thought about this strange offer, and his mind kept coming back to warriors as fierce and steady in battle as Thlasar himself. It seemed to him that to strengthen his fighting force with such ferocity was a worthy goal, and he made a grant of land to Thlasar and his kin. So for his part, he took them in and maintained them. For a year there were no problems, but after that the events that occurred were a constant source of shame to the Irish High King. Only 4 months later they had caused themselves to be hated and unwelcome throughout the land by committing insults and pestering and injuring the noblemen and women. At the end of the year, Matholwch's people came to him with their complaints. They told him to part with them, and they gave the king a choice. Either get rid of this disruptive and evil folk who are so much like the Fomori of old, or lose his kingship and his country. So the king asked Thlasar and his people to depart, but they would not go. They said the king had granted them the land, and they were keeping their end of the bargain in any wars that he had called upon them. These cruel people would not leave of their own free will, and Matholwch could not best them with force of arms, so the king felt he was forced to go to his council in search of advice. The council came up with a terrible solution to the problem. They forged a huge house from iron that had been blessed by the gods, and then the Irish court summoned all the smiths of Erin, including any who were in possession of tongs and a hammer, and they piled charcoal and coal up the walls as high as the roof of the house. The tricky part of their plan was getting Thlasar, Cymydai and their children into the huge house, and this they did by offering to celebrate their warlike achievements in a magical house built for heroes. So they came and entered the house, laughing and joking the while. They were served food and mead until they became loud and raucous with the drink. When the Irish were certain that the folk in the house were intoxicated, the doors were bolted shut, and the smiths began to light a fire in the charcoal and the coals around its walls. Each man of them brought bellows to each side of the house, and they made the fire blaze white hot, like the heat of a smith's forge. As the walls of the great house turned a cherry red, Thlasar and his folk quietened down and held a council in the middle of the floor, as far away from the walls as they could sit. Matholwch and his men could not hear the details of their plan, but when the panels of the iron house became white hot, Thlasar charged at a panel with his shoulder, and because of its great heat, it shattered. He and his wife Cymydai ran through the flames, now roaring up past the roof. None of their children made it out of the conflagration, and the evil pair escaped into the darkness of the night with their cauldron.
It was a terrible deed we committed there, but my people had been saved. I suppose that after their escape they came over to you, my lord.
That is so, my brother. They came here and they gave me the cauldron into my hands in exchange for their safety.
So how did you choose to accommodate them, Lord? Were your people not harassed by Thlasar and his foul spawn?
I sent them into a different district, where they became numerous. As each new warrior was born, they had to travel to a new district, and that way, when they bred with my people, we became stronger and fiercer. They raised every area and strengthened every place with men and arms that were the best that had ever been seen.
They made fine and joyful conversation that night, for as long as they pleased. They sang and caroused, and when the desire to sleep was stronger than the desire for another song or another drink, they went to bed. And so they spent the remainder of that feast in high spirits, with good companionship and joy in their hearts. Thank you. episode, Bran Wen goes to Ireland with her new husband, and her new bed of roses reveals a few sharp thorns.
That sounds painful.
Didn't you want to say something to our new listeners?
Oh yes, we have lots of them. Hello and welcome. It's great to have you with us. Whether you're listening on the Centre for Pagan Studies event, our Facebook page, our website, or your favourite podcatcher. It's great to have you join us.
We'd also like to send out a huge thank you to those folks who are supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/Celtic Myth Podcast. If you'd like to join them in supporting our podcast to continue to dramatise these amazing stories, please pop along to patreon.com/Celtic Myth Podcast and help us out.
That's about all we've got time for today in this episode, so we'll leave you with some fabulous music from the lovely Blanche Rowan and Mike Golston.
And this is a track called Spirit of the Trees. It's a fabulous track. You'll enjoy this one. It's always got mythological connotations.
That's good, isn't it?
It's from their fantastic album about the Wheel of the Year called The Dance Goes On.
So we wish you a safe and healthy week and say, Húlvaur.
The youngest of trees, through green leaves and branches the wind it do blow. She tosses her hair and she'll dance on the breeze. Down in the green wood they grow. The yew is an old man, all twisted with age. Green leaves and branches the wind it do blow. In stone circle and churchyard he is wise man and sage. Down in the green wood they grow. A sweet blushing bride is the hawthorn in May. Through green leaves and branches the wind it do blow. queen of the land. Down in the greenwood they grow. He's tall and he's strong, as a good king should be. Through green leaves and branches the windy do blow.
Celtic Myth Pod Show. If you enjoyed listening to this show, please come and support us on Patreon at patreon.com/Celtic Myth Podcast.
We hope you'll stay tuned for the next episode. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can email us at CelticMythShow@gmail.com or come and chat to us on social media. All of the links are on our contact page on our website at CelticMythPodShow.com.
We'd also like to send out a big shout of thanks to Coolan's Hounds for our theme music, and that's available at sfhounds.com.
This show is a Celtic Myth Show production.